We're going so fast at the end of last time to finish up challah, so we can start a new mitzvah this time. So I just wanted to add two small points about challah. One is that one of the issues with kneading a dough that is made only with fruit juice, let alone the issue in terms of whether you require to separate challah from that or not, but you also have the problem that we know that only one of the seven mashkim can do what's called being machshir something to an agricultural product to accept tumah. So therefore, if you have 100% pure apple juice and you knead a dough with 100% pure apple juice, so the flour has never been in contact with an actual halachic liquid that could allow it to start being mekabel tumah. So therefore, even if you're the most tummy person in the world, you're kneading this dough, and you bake it, you have and you separate challah from that dough, so you have a problem that challah is tahor. Mm-hmm. That challah is tahor, so therefore what gives you the right to burn it? It's supposed to be eaten. Okay, you have a kohen, the kohen has a problem that he's not tahor enough to eat the challah in Eretz Yisrael. He can't eat the challah, but you, nevertheless you can't burn it, so you're a little bit stuck. You have to put it in your freezer until Eliyahu HaNavi comes. You know, it's going to be ridiculous. And a chametz, if it's a chametz, you also have a problem. Again, there's a whole issue about whether other liquids besides water create chametz or not. Okay, fine. So that's one issue. The second thing that we forgot to mention, which is an important kula for chutz la'aretz, which is that if you forget to separate challah, you're allowed to separate challah after you've eaten. Mm-hmm. You mean, so you have the option in chutz la'aretz that if you have lovely bread that you baked, whoops, you forgot to separate challah, and it looks gorgeous and you want to serve it at a wedding, and you don't want to take a little piece off now for challah, even from the underside, okay, no one will see it, whatever, but you don't want to take a little piece off, so you can cut it and distribute all the pieces, and then surreptitiously take a piece of challah afterwards, even though some people might have already started eating, or if it's Shabbos, we also didn't mention that on Shabbos, so there is a prohibition of separating challah and trumas u'maisras, that this is a prohibition midrabanan because of makeh bepatish. We know there's a melacha called makeh bepatish, that putting the finishing touches on something is the melacha makeh bepatish. So here, you're halachically putting the finishing touches on the food. It wasn't allowed to be eaten before, now it's allowed to be eaten. So therefore, you're not allowed to separate challah or other trumas u'maisras on Shabbos. It also looks like you're being makdish it. It also looks like you're sanctifying something which is not allowed on Shabbos, again with the abundance. So this is a good option on Shabbos. Then instead of separating challah, then you would not you can start eating the challah. Also, if you wanted to, it might also be an issue for Lecha Mishnah. Although some say that some bring a raya from this, that since you could bake the challah and then separate challah, so the sheer challah is 1 in 48th or 1 in 24th. So they say if a challah has a piece of 1 in 24th missing, so then it's still considered shalim. Because you can see that you could separate... Okay, whatever. Man, it's not 100% clear. But you can't say... So the one option is that you start eating, you cut the Lecha Mishnah, you start eating, whoops, you forgot to separate challah, so you just save a little piece of the bread, and you can separate the challah after Shabbos, even though you've already eaten it. And if you finish the challah, I mean, the bread. I'm going to confuse our terminology here. If you finish the bread and you realize you hadn't separated challah, then it's not good. It's not good, but because it's challah's chutz la'aretz, it's only the rabbanan. So therefore, the level of avera is not as severe as if you were dealing with challah d'oraisa, which sometimes it is in Eretz Yisrael. This would not work in Eretz Yisrael, even at times where Chalas Eretz Yisrael is the Rabbanan also, because not most of the Jews live in Eretz Yisrael. So you don't have this leniency, and you're not allowed to eat the bread until you've separated Chalas. So on Shabbos, you'd be really stuck. You have a problem. Okay. Mitzvah Shin Pei Vav, 386. Mitzvah Tzitzis. The mitzvah of fringes on the garments. Latil tzitzis bebegich and iskasebo, to put fringes on a garment that with which one covers oneself. Shenemar v'yasu lohem tzitzis v'zeh achiyuv hu k'sheyiyye labeged arba k'nafayim o yoser. So the garment has to have four or more corners.
How do you have more than four corners? By angles.
Octagon. Right?
An octagon.
Okay. My high school geometry is coming back. Okay, so the if you have a garment that's in the shape of an octagon, then you have to put on tzitzis as long as it has more than four corners. But if it has three corners, if you have a garment in the shape of a triangle, then you would not have to affix tzitzis. You'd be allowed to wear it without putting on tzitzis. Dichsiv al arba kanfos kesuscha, that you have to put tzitzis on four corners. V'yesh b'chal chamesh o yoser arba, that if there has five corners or more, that has at least four corners. So you put it on the points, the farthest points to each other. V'yesh shiuro, so what is the minimum size of the garment that is required to have tzitzis? Kedei sheyuchal liskaseis bo rosho v'rov gufo shel katan hamahalech bashuk levad mibli shomer. So the minimum shear is that a size garment that would cover the head and body, and most of the body, of a child who's old enough to go to the marketplace without someone watching him. So maybe a 6 or 7 year old child is this. Others say 9. Okay, yeah.
Except nowadays in the United States when they put you in jail, you know.
Right.
Right. Okay. Yeah, but okay, but it doesn't go by that. It goes by someone who's in theory old enough to walk in the marketplace alone, and who could come home and knows the way home. Yeah, whatever. V'shiyeh hatalis. Oh, so what does this mean? So he doesn't say this explicitly here, but it has to be. We assume that why is that the shear? Who cares for a guy, a little kid's garment? Well, who cares? The answer is because that's the shear that an adult in a pinch, if no other garment were available, so the adult would wear that garment to go out into the street. A garment of that size. Maybe it wouldn't be as preferred, but at least they could get away with it. So that's why it's that shear. So based on this, we have to figure out exactly what the size is. So the Achronim give measurements in actual length measurements. That they say they measured a 6, 7, 9 year old child, whatever, and they say that a garment that covers the head and most of the body is 1.5 amos square. 1.5 amos, which is pretty small, actually.
Yeah, it is.
It's very small. I don't think an adult would wear that. Okay, it is a little odd. I think they're talking in that case, though, about a talus katan also, which is also a little bit of a discussion as to how this shear relates to a talus katan, which is why, anyway, because of this issue, this measurement that some achronim give about an amma and a half, that's why you hear that some people are makbid, that their talus katan should be 3/4 of an amma in front and 3/4 of an amma in back. Because that adds up to an amma and a half. Others are machmir that it should be an amma long in the front and an amma in the back. Okay, so that's most talus katan that you find nowadays have this shear if they're made for an adult. Others say no, the point is not an exact measurement of a child. The point is, lemaisa, what's a garment that an adult could get by in a pinch, within a pinch? So therefore, famously, Reb Chaim Volozhiner, the top student of the Vilna Gaon. Some bring this from the Vilna Gaon himself, but it's not so clear that's really true. But the Reb Chaim Volozhiner was makbid that the talus katan has to go to the knees, has to reach down to your knees, because an adult would never wear a garment in public that obviously talus katan is open at the side, so you wouldn't go to that. Assuming you sewed up or closed somehow the side so that it wouldn't, flap open and then you'd be wearing nothing underneath. So that an adult, the absolute minimum shear that an adult would ever go with is a garment that covered the upper body plus plus to the knees. So that's why that. So Reb Moshe Sternbach has a discussion about this. That he says maybe nowadays the garment, even according to Reb Chaim Volozhiner, the talus katan doesn't need to go all the way to the knees because we wear shorter garments. If you're assuming that it doesn't mean that there's nothing underneath, but maybe that you have something underneath, but it's just you wouldn't wear this garment anyway. So maybe just like in the olden days, people didn't wear short jackets. People wore long coats that reached approximately to the knees. So Chaim Volozhiner was talking in the times that people wore long coats all the time. But nowadays that people wear short jackets, so maybe it's enough that a talis katan should be, even according to this Machmir Shita, should be long enough that it should be approximately the length of a jacket. So it should go, you know, slightly below the waist. And he thinks that might be good enough. But nevertheless, the normal minhag is that your people are makbid just on three quarters of an amma or an amma, yeah?
Well, logically, then you should say also, isn't it something which you would, in fact, wear in public? You know, in other words, like it doesn't look like undergarments or something like that. Normally, you'd say talis katan, you know, you wear, you know, you don't, you know, isn't worn outside. I know, of course, there's some Hasidim wear them, you know, outside. And
yeah, it depends where you are.
Oh, okay.
There are people who wear the talis katan on top. Yeah, but people wear the talis katan on top don't only wear the talis katan. You wear a shirt underneath.
Yeah, right. Okay.
So you've perhaps touched on another point, which is that there are Rishonim that hold that a talis katan is not chayev in tzitzis. Because they hold that the only type of garment that's chayev in tzitzis says in the Torah, tiskaseba, that you cover yourself with it, it's only an overgarment that's chayev in tzitzis, one with which you enwrap yourself. And that's the Nusach HaBracha as well, asher gichana mitzvosa v'tzivanu lehisateif batzitzis. That you enwrap yourself in tzitzis. So therefore, according to many Rishonim, only a talis gadol, obviously, now talis gadol nowadays we wear only for davening.
Yeah.
But in the olden days they used to wear something that looked like a talis gadol as a regular overgarment. So according to that, only a talis gadol is chayiv in tzitzis and not a talis katan at all. A talis katan, we know, was only something that was created in like the Middle Ages, because they stopped wearing the square, you know, four-cornered garments as regular overgarments. So they didn't want to completely neglect the mitzvah of tzitzis, even though the Sefer HaChinuch will tell us later that technically, if you only have to put on tzitzis if you have a four-cornered garment. If you don't have four-cornered garments, so then you don't have to wear tzitzis. There's not a technical obligation that a man has to wear tzitzis all the time. But we voluntarily accepted the idea that we do wear tzitzis all the time, or as much of the time as possible, in order to fulfill the mitzvah.
Isn't so, that a brisker chumrah, I believe, they're not to wear tzitzis on Shabbos?
That's based on the idea, maybe, that a talis katan is too small. So if it's too small and it's not a real garment, so then the Ritva has like this. He says if you wear a talis katan on Shabbos, then you should make it more into like a real garment instead of just something that's it looks like an extra unnecessary garment. So
yeah,
you should
like
put
a necktie or a yarmulke. So, these are also even smaller. I mean, you wear those on Shabbos. So.
Yeah, but this is designed to be like a shirt. A yarmulke is something that people wear. It's a normal headgear that people wear. A tie is not a garment, it's a tachshit, it's an adornment, so that it's based on a different set of halachas. But here, he says, a talis katan looks like a beged miyutar. It looks like an extra thing that's unnecessary, so maybe you shouldn't wear it on Shabbos. And he suggests a solution that if you make a buckle on the side, so then it makes it more like a real garment, and you could wear it on Shabbos. So the briskers don't wear a talis katan on Shabbos because I guess they didn't. Well, according to Reb Chaim Volozhiner, you're not allowed to wear a talis katan on Shabbos because nowadays the regular talis katan, because it's not big enough, stam, to fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis. But people are also choshesh for the fact that the talis katan, according to a lot of shitas, is patur from tzitzis, is exempt from tzitzis. So therefore, since it's just an unnecessary garment, the tzitzis are questionable. Also, because they have an odd diuk that the Rambam held that if there's no tcheles, then you can't wear the tzitzis on Shabbos. That's probably not true, but almost certainly not true. But that's another reason. They have all these tseirufim, reasons to question the talis katan, and according to some, even a talis gadol, that you wouldn't wear it on Shabbos. The talis gadol also is because the way we wear it is also you could argue that it's not a real way of wearing because you just fold it over your shoulders, you don't wrap yourself with it, you don't it doesn't actually do much. But on the other hand, that's also probably not correct, because that nowadays that's how people wear the talis gadol, even though it's not the old way. Now it goes by what people do nowadays, not based on what they used to do.
So it'd be better for a talis gadol then to be like a poncho with a hole in the middle, and then
Well, if it's a hole in the middle, then it's a talis gadol. The point of a talis gadol is if it's a solid thing that you wrap yourself with, not that you drape over your body with your head in the middle. Another reason they don't wear tzitzis on Shabbos is because of the Maharam. The Maharam didn't wear tzitzis on Shabbos outside because he held that you needed to check the tzitzis before you wear it, and he didn't want to check the tzitzis on Shabbos to see that they were still kosher, because you're not allowed to fix it. So what can you do? So he didn't want to check, so he was stuck. So that's why he didn't wear tzitzis. He didn't wear tzitzis outside on Shabbos. I think even a talis gadol. So there are some are only nizar by a talis gadol. Some are nizar by a talis gadol, even not to wear any tzitzis on Shabbos, especially because if you have tchelis, though, so potentially even though you solved maybe the brisker problem of wearing tzitzis without tchelis on Shabbos. But if you did tzitzis the wrong way, there are different shittas about how to make the tchelis. So then that could also potentially be a problem, because Rashi says, interestingly enough, so the Gemara says that if you wear tzitzis that are not kosher on Shabbos, so you're chayev chatos. That is considered to be hotzah on a deraisa level, because the tzitzis are chashuv, that you'll take the tzitzis, if the tzitzis aren't kosher on this garment, if the tzitzis aren't halachically fulfilling their role on this garment, so they're not considered to be batal to the garment. They're considered to be strings that you're going to use somewhere else. It's as if you just, you had a string, a really nice string. Let's say a tailor had a beautiful string that he was saving for a certain occasion, and he wanted to wear it on Shabbos somehow. So he doesn't, it's not serving any function to the garment that he's currently wearing. He just tied it on, and or just glued it on, and it's just sitting there. So that's what the that's the way that the Gemara says that since tzitzis are something that are chashuv, that are important, that you'd use it somewhere else, they have an independent identity, they're not just secondary to the garment, that if they're not fulfilling their function in this garment, then it's considered to be carrying. So Rashi says that what the Gemara means is only tcheles. White strings are not chashuv. So white strings are always going to be considered to be secondary to the garment, even if they're tied incorrectly. But tcheles is so expensive that that's what's considered to be chashuv. So you could argue that maybe if you do the tcheles wrong somehow, if it's not the really the correct sheet about tcheles, then the tzitzit, then the tcheles strings are not batal. They don't become nullified to the garment, because really they should be used elsewhere. They don't really, they're not really serving their function for this garment. So all of these svaras are very difficult, as the Nitziv points out. Because the Mishnah Berurah says, he talks about how if you wear a talis katan that's smaller than the shear on Shabbos, so that's no good. You're not allowed to do that, because the tzitzis are not fulfilling any function. They're just they're not necessary here. So they're just strings that have an independent identity tied for no reason onto a garment, and therefore you're not allowed to wear that on Shabbos. So famously, the Nitziv writes a letter to the Chofetz Chaim redressing this point that he made in the Mishnah Berurah that you're not allowed to wear a too small talis katan on Shabbos. He says, I don't understand. Yes, the Gemara says that a talis that's incorrectly tied, that doesn't have all the tzitzis done properly, is you're not allowed to wear that on Shabbos because of carrying. But here, if this is a garment, even if the talis katan is too small, he wears it every day. This is how he goes out like this every single day. What do you mean that he's going to take the tzitzis and put it somewhere else? He wants the tzitzis here for whatever reason. He said, you can't say something that you wear every day as a normal garment, at least in your eyes a normal garment, you can't say that that's a problem of hotza. So that's why all these reasons that we gave are somewhat questionable, because the Netziv Svara is very good. If you keep it like that all the time, and that's how you treat it, so it's hard to say that would be a problem to wear on Shabbos. But nevertheless, there are some chashashes, there are some concerns, so that's why, as you mentioned, so briskers briskers don't wear a talis katan, some even a talis gadol, on Shabbos. Ulefi adome, continue to say, frachinoch, shezmanz, okay, sorry, v'shia talis mitzemer o mipishtim, that the talis has to be made of wool or linen. Oh, but if the talis is made of neither wool nor linen, so it's only chayav in tzitzis midrabanan. On a deraisa level, only those two garments. So this is a machlokes in the Gemara, and a machlokes rishonim, how to paskin. That some say that it says in the Chumash, by tzaras, beged hatzemer o hapishtim, that a garment of wool or linen. So you see that on a deraisa level, the Torah only considers it to be real clothing if it's made of wool or linen, so therefore it's not a real clothing on a deraisa level, and you wouldn't have to put tzitzis on a cotton garment. So others say, no, one of the shitas in the Gemara says, no, that's not true. You have to put tzitzis on everything, mida raisa. So the most Rishonim paskin like the shita that, like the Sefer HaChinuch says, the only wool and linen are chayav mida raisa, and other types of garments would only be chayav mida rabbanans, which is why... a lot of people are makbid that to wear only a wool talis cotton. So everybody wears a talis gold, wool talis gadol. There's no such thing as a cotton talis gadol. I mean, there could be in theory, but it's just not made. So the in terms of the talis cotton, so some people wear wool and some people wear other types of materials, especially in the summer. So wool talis cotton would be very hot, so therefore a lot of people switch to cotton, either because they go like the Vilna Gaon that everything is chayav midaraisa, or just because they hold, okay, well, who needs it? It doesn't have to be a deraisa, we could be mekayim to the rabbanan too. The rabbanans are also very precious, and we don't want to schwitz like crazy in the summer, so we wear cotton talis cotton. Yeah.
Where did the bracha, al mitzvah tzitzis come from?
Oh, it was invented in the times of the Rishonim because of the talis cotton.
Wait, I thought
because of.
Only Chazal were allowed to invent bracha.
Yeah, but the idea is that there is a bracha on the fulfillment of the mitzvah of tzitzis that was mentioned in Chazal, which is l'sateh b'tzitzis. Mm-hmm. And if you say the bracha on mitzvah tzitzis, you'd be yotze b'dievet anyway. So it's not like really inventing a new bracha, because you even if you take your talis gadol and you say asher kishna mitzvah tzitzis, al mitzvah tzitzis, so it's close enough that you'd be yotze with that anyway. So the idea is, since with a talis cotton you're not actually enwrapping yourself with it, you're not being misatef, so therefore you should make a bracha of al mitzvah tzitzis. Basically, you're thanking. Also, it's not a bracha levatala, because you're not saying, God, you commanded us to do a certain action. You commanded us regarding the mitzvah of tzitzis. You make it so vague that maybe it's not a bracha levatala, even if it's not the ideal way to do it.
So generally, though, you're supposed to essentially, put on the talis cotton without a bracha, having in mind that when you put in your...
Correct. So those who...
Not all that, that will include the,
Right. So because it is a bit of a shaila with a bracha on the talis cotton, so those who wear a talis gadol generally do not make a bracha on the talis cotton, and they just make the bracha on talis gadol and exempt the talis cotton because that's the real bracha. And others say, well, even on a talis cotton, if you enwrap yourself with it, you could make the bracha lisateh b'tzitzis, so maybe you should do that. Okay, that's okay. But the normal minhag is you just wear the talis cotton, and you those who don't wear a talis gadol, and you make the bracha al mitzvah tzitzis. Also, is relevant that if you have a hefsik, if you have a big hefsik in the middle of the day of wearing tzitzis, so let's say you take a nap, and you take off your talis cotton. Even somebody who normally wears a talis gadol in the morning. So you take your talis cotton off, and then you take a nap, and then you wake up again, you put it back on. So even in that situation, you would make the bracha of al mitzvah tzitzis, unless you were really choshesh that the talis cotton doesn't, it might be exempt from tzitzis entirely, so then you would never make the bracha on a talis cotton, you would only make the bracha on a talis gadol. And there are some who go even farther, that you only make the bracha of lisateh b'tzitzis if you do what's called atifas yishma'ilim, the Arab-style wrapping. How do you know, where does that come from? The Gemara in Moed Katan says that in Ovel, somebody who's in mourning has to do atifas harosh, has to cover his head. So the Gemara says that Rabbi Yochanan says that it has to be like the atifas yishma'ilim, that someone in Avelos has to wrap their head in the manner of Arabs, meaning you cover your head until the cheek. Mm-hmm. Until the cheek. So what does it mean, until the cheek?
So just the eyes are.
Right, so the simple understanding is what it means is you take the corner of the garment, you go like this, and you cover your mouth with it, and just your eyes. And
right,
so like, yeah, so that's what atifas, probably not women, though. So women always went like that. They were women, but what do you mean?
Oh.
So, no, not always. No, that's not true. That's not true that Jewish women covered their mouths. That says in the Mishnah, when it talks about Hotzah and Shabbos, so it says, Arvios Yotzos Reulos, that a Jewish woman who lives in an Arab country where the minhag is that they cover their whole face, only leaving the eyes out, they're allowed to go out like that on Shabbos. They think that maybe that's not a normal manner of dressing, So therefore, you wouldn't be allowed to go like that on Shabbos. It would be considered cowering. So the Mishnah teaches us that no, since in that place it's a normal manner of dressing, so you're allowed to wear a burqa on Shabbos, a kula, okay? Makel. You're allowed to wear a burqa on Shabbos. So the So that's why when you put on the Talis Gadol, in order to, even though this is not the majority opinion, even though it's only a minority opinion, that this idea applies also to wearing tzitzis, that's not considered really ituf, it's not considered really wrapping, unless you do the Arab-style wrapping. That's why when you put on your Talis Gadol, so you put it over your head, and you take a corner of the Talis Gadol, and you cover your mouth, and just leaving out your eyes, because maybe you're not Yotzei the mitzvah tzitzis, unless you wear the Talis in such a manner. It's a big chumrah. But that's the normal minag. However, again, it's technically speaking a chumrah. So if you don't know how to do this, and some gedolim actually didn't do this at all. So like the Chazon Ish, Rav Yosef Ber Soloveitchik, the minag, it doesn't really matter technically. So Rav Yosef Ber also Rav Soloveitchik also didn't do this. He followed the sheet of majority opinion that you don't have to do this at all. You just wear your talis gadol. That's also called the ituf, because it's essentially a garment that wraps the body. So the Mishnah Berurah, yeah?
Is there some idea about the two tzitzis have to be in front and two in the back?
Yeah, Midrashim ring like that. It's not in the Gemara, but Midrashim say that two tzitzis, the normal manner of wearing the talis, that two tzitzis are supposed to be in front and two in the back, because you're surrounded by mitzvahs.
So wearing it like a scarf or something like that.
Wearing it like a scarf is not good, because it's not chayiv in tzitzis, such a garment.
Yeah, right.
Your scarf is four corners, right?
Yeah.
You don't put tzitzis on it. It's not a real garment, it's just something that goes around your neck. So the Mishnah Berurah and other
it's a real garment. You obviously you can wear a scarf on Shabbos, you know.
Right, but in terms of the tzitzit, it has to be something that covers your body,
right.
Not something that goes around your neck.
It's a woman anyway, but you have a really big scarf, not like this, like much like wider and longer.
Yes, so
and
maybe that would be
time. Sometimes people will turn over a corner like that, so it doesn't actually help.
A men's? That's like a shawl you're talking about.
Well, yeah, it's more. Okay, so if a woman has a shawl.
But it's a woman's garment, so it's not chayav in tzitzis.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And but also, it's about that the bekeshes or something like that, which have a big slit up the back. Sometimes you see the corner is rounded off. Is that because they worry about it?
I haven't seen that much. I've heard about that. That's true. Yeah, that's also, strictly speaking, a chumrah. It's not really required, because it's not four distinct corners. It's a question. Yeah, all these things are questions, but again, you also have that cheetah that, again, it's not chayav in tzitzis unless it's literally a rectangle or you know, a huge garment or with more than four corners. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the Mishnah Berurah says that he interprets the Arab wrapping. So he says when you put on your talis, you should, what it means until the cheek is you put on your talis from the head down until the cheek.
Right.
That's why a lot of later poskim say, "What do you mean? How could that be the Arab wrapping? The Arabs went around with their eyes covered."
Yeah, right, right.
That doesn't make sense.
It's definitely not the man.
So that's why the correct way to put on the talis gadol is on the you cover your head from the bottom,
right.
Not
so
from
the
top.
So if you're in a sandstorm or something like that you know protects you, so right. You have to see. Okay, right. Yeah.
Exactly.
I asked actually Professor Tawil to show me exactly how the Arabs
so he did it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So yeah. Let's see. Uh-huh. You know, yeah, suddenly, you know, yeah, it's a Lawrence Arabia look there.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. Where are we? Let's see.
Yeah. Summer feasting.
Fine. So, haya choser al shezewa beged shanu chayovim lahatol bo tzitzis kashen chazbo. So it's these types of garments that you have to put on tzitzis on the rice level. Oh, just in terms of that. So even people make this error when they put on the talis gadol that sometimes they just wrap their heads. They in order to look like an Arab, you just put it and then you take all four tzitzis, which some authorities do discuss taking all four tzitzis and throwing over your left shoulder. But instead of taking all four tzitzis and still wrapping the body and putting the tzitzis over their four shoulder, which some poskim discuss, they make it like a scarf. They take all four tzitzis and then they bring the whole talis over to above the shoulder level and throw it, and then it becomes just like a headdress. So that's a big problem, because such a garment that just covers the head like that is not chayiv in tzitzis.
But don't they then like take it down and put it on properly?
Yeah, but it's a hefzik between the bracha and the wearing.
Oh.
In other words, the whole point of doing the atifas ishma'elim, the Arab-style wearing, is out of concern for the opinion that maybe you have to do it like that in order to really fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis. So therefore, right after the bracha, at least, you should put on the talis like that. But if you're going to do something that's wrong, then that's worse. then you might as well just do the regular way. You just might as well just make the bracha and put it on, because according to the vast majority of opinions, that's good. It's not going to be a chumrah, then there's no point. If it's just going to be a hefsek and a leniency, then it's no good. Okay. Hayachaser davar echad mikol eile kigon sheyesh lo pachos narbek nafayim, has fewer than four corners. Oshir god lo pachos mizeh shamarin, or less than this size. Oshu misharminim, if it's the rest of the other types of materials. Potor minat tzitzis minat Torah. Midarais, it's exempt from tzitzis, kigon, and for the other things besides the type of material, it'll be exempt midarabanan as well. Kigon, big day meshi, or afilo shel tzemer gimalim, or arnovim, or minotza shel izim, even if it's silk, or from camel hair, or rabbit hair, or goat hair. So, what's goat hair?
Common.
Cashmere, yes. Mm-hmm. Cashmere is not chayiv in tzitzis, amidaraisa. Mm-hmm. It's also not chatnas, by the way. If you buy 100% cashmere garments, so then even if it has linen in it, so it's that's allowed. Oh, mm-hmm. So you don't have to get 100% cashmere garments. Check for chatnas.
It's not wool.
Right. Only if it's lamb's wool.
Hair. It's not wool.
Sheep's wool. Whatever. Yeah. Kol elu pturim min atzitzis min haTorah she'ein nikra beged stam el beged shaltem rechelim buchvasim o beged pishtim. So it has to be linen or wool from sheep. Lechein in tzaras habeged, the same as it would have applied to tzaras, which types of garments can contract tzaras. Kemo shekasavti b'mekomo, as I explained in the place in mitzvah kufayin beis. Shorish haMitzvah nigla b'kasu, the reasoning is explained explicitly in the pasuk. Shilaman nizgor kol mitzvos Hashem tamid, that we should remember all the mitzvahs all the time by seeing the tzitzis. So what does that mean? Does that mean you have to look at your tzitzis all the time? What does it mean? So it's a questionable what exactly the parameters of this are. If you look at it when you first put it on, is that good enough? Some people are makpid, as we know. The Mishnah Berurah writes very strongly that you should wear your tzitzis out. As a quick, what's called in contemporary terminology, you should wear your tzitzis out, because at least it gives you the opportunity to fulfill the mitzvah. You know, at any time you could look at the tzitzis. I was once told by the Chofetz Chaim's great great grandson, mm-hmm, that what the Mishnah Berurah means is that you're not supposed to put the tzitzis in your underwear, but if you're wearing proper undergarments, it's not such a problem, because he calls that two things, because it gives you the opportunity to see it, and he calls it the bizayon for the tzitzis to stick it in your pants. Mm-hmm. So he says the great grandson told me that what it means is that if you stick it in your pants in an honorable way, that it's not like mamish in your underwear, then that would not be a bizayon for the tzitzis. So the truth is that even though this to fulfill this idea of the Mishnah Berurah is very popular nowadays. Earlier authorities say this also. The Magen Avraham says this because there's a disagreement as to whether the garment, the talus cotton itself, is supposed to be on top of your clothes or under your clothes. Oh, yeah. So they say even if it's under, if it's under your clothes, so should it be completely under, or the garment is under but the tzitzis are out. So the Magen Avraham says the tzitzis should be out, and the Mishnah Berurah has a very long discussion about this where he talks very strongly about wearing them out. So the truth is that this wasn't the normal practice, right, in a lot of places. That I heard reports that even in the yeshiva in Radin, where the Chofetz Chaim lived, the Bacharim did not wear the tzitzis out. And also, maybe you could argue that as part of this, you know, Litvisha thing, that then the Musar movement, they considered it very important that Bacharim should dress respectably. So you see pictures from yeshivas 100 years ago, that all the Bacharim are wearing nice suits and clean-shaven and all these things, which you don't think of as necessarily quintessentially Jewish. So they didn't wear the tzitzis out because it was considered to be a disheveled look. Also, Alpi Kabbalah, the Arizal says that the talus cotton is supposed to be under the garments. So Rabbi Avadi Yosef writes a tshuva, he brings earlier sources as well, where he says that means that even the tzitzis are supposed to be covered for the talus cotton. It's only the talus gadol that's supposed to be visible.
What about this thing about wrapping it around your belt?
That's a practical thing, actually. I did that once because, you know, if you wear them out, then they tend to catch on things and get ripped and so on and so forth, get dirty, you know. But if you just go ahead, and also you pull your shirt up, and so, you know.
Then would you go to a job interview like that?
Well, whatever. So that's something which where they're visible, but they're not messy and they're not liable to get.
Right, and just in terms of the look, so it looks more kempt. That
it's like the pants behind the ear, yeah, sort of.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, sort of. Yeah, some people don't like the payas behind the ears either. Why should you hide from having payas? Okay, whatever it is, but, so, okay, based on this recommendation of the Mishnah Berurah, so, Chassidim always wore the Torah Talis Kotan outside, but based on this recommendation of the Mishnah Berurah, you have a lot of people nowadays, especially more yeshivish variety, who wear the Talis Kotan under the clothes, but they take the tzitzis out. And so they have the opportunity to wear the tzitzis all the time. But okay, keep in mind that historically, again, this wasn't necessarily the practice, and many very firm people did not do this, despite the strong manner in which the Mishnah Berurah expresses himself about this matter. Okay. Ve'ein davar ba'olam yoser tov lazikaron kemo. I have a cute story about that, actually, which is that... there was one Chashuva Tam Chacham, and I had seen pictures of him before, and he wore his tzitzis out, but in the time that I knew him, he always wore his tzitzis in. So I said, oh, I thought maybe he had a revelation that he decided, no, he has to go in accordance with a historical, more historical practice, or you know, maybe he realized that there are other opinions on this matter besides the Mishnah Berurah, and he had to change the Shita. So I said, no, so what happened? He used to wear his tzitzis out, now you wear your tzitzis in. He says, well, the problem is, you know, so when I wore my tzitzis out, they used to catch on things and rips. And my tzitzis are so expensive because they have so many hidurim, I can't afford to replace them all the time. That's why I started wearing my tzitzis in. So, okay.
I wonder if Rebelsky wore his tzitzis out, since famously, he worked for a Talis Kotan, he wore tchelis.
Yeah.
But he didn't for the Talis Gadol because he didn't want to appear too, you know,
yeah.
Right, you know, modern Orthodox or something. Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, that's
the thing. The idea that you're not supposed to be haughty applies in terms of performing chumras.
Mm-hmm.
Wearing tchelis is not a chumras. It doesn't the chumras. You have to do it. It's a mitzvah d'oraisa. So there's no problem
straight.
Of yura.
Straight up. It's not.
No.
You describe today? I mean, I don't really know the ins and outs of this, but like you see today, you see, I'm thinking more guys wearing tchelis than did in some of my husband's generation.
Oh, it didn't exist, actually.
Right. We'll get to tchelis. He's going to talk about it.
Okay.
Don't worry. Rav Moshe Mordechai Karp, by the way, since you brought it up, he wears tchelis on his Talis Gadol even. And he's a big Talmud of Rav Yoshev, and Rav Yoshev famously was not so into the tchelis. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, not everybody. So, Rebelsky, yeah, he didn't wear it on his Talis Gadol, but others do. Okay. Vein davar ba'olam yoser tov lezikaron kibo nosei chosam adonav kavua b'chsusa sherechase b'otomid vein avali bo'alav kol yom. So nothing is a greater reminder than attaching something to your clothing that you could see all the time. V'zeu shenamar b'bakasuv uzchartem es kol mitzvos Hashem. You should remember all the commandments of God. V'amr zicharam levracha ki milas tzitzis tirmos atariyag mitzvos. That the word tzitzis is... gematria of taryag plus im tzirav. Let's see. Let's calculate. Tzitzis is 480 plus 20 is 500, right?
Wait a minute. The art school first gives the whole thing.
Let's calculate.
All right. Tzadi's 90. Yod is 10. Tuf is 400. So then...
600. Wait, 600.
Yeah,
what?
600, yeah.
So with 613.
With both yuds. You have to count with both yuds then, right?
Right.
600, but then you have 8 strands, 5 knots.
Right, so im tzir of shmona chutin, you have to add 8 for the strings,
yeah. And
it says v'chamisha ksharin shebo, and add 5 for the knots. So the knots is interesting, that this is a
five
sort...
knots?
There are 5 knots in the tzitzis. So this is a whole interesting history of how this came about, that it could be that what the original meaning of the 5 knots was that there were 2 knots at the beginning of the tzitzis and 5 and 3 knots at the end, which just strengthened it to make sure that it wouldn't unravel. But then at the time of the Midrashim later and gave it significance that there were 5 knots, and then later on the minhag developed that the 5 knots were double knots, they're really 10 knots, but 5 double knots, and they were spaced throughout the tzitzis because it looks prettier that way, right? They space throughout the tzitzis, so that's the 5 knots in the tzitzis. The Gemara doesn't mention the 5 knots in the tzitzis, but a lot of the Rishonim and Midrashim mention that there are 5 knots in the tzitzis. Vod Omer li libi sheyesh bo remez v'zikaron shegufo shel adam v'nafsho akol Hashem baruch hu. It also alludes to the fact that all of the human body is from God. Ki alovan remez laguf shehu min haaretz. The white strings allude to the body, which is from the earth. Shenivres min hasheleg. So earth is created from snow. Okay, news to me, but whatever. Shehu lovan. So snow is white. Which is a collection of halachic musardic things. So misheleg shetachas kisei akavo, that the earth is created from the snow that is under the heavenly throne. So God likes to hang out with snow. He likes to ski. It's like the heavenly throne is on snow. Okay. V'chutin remez el haguf, that the strings allude to the body. Ke'enyan omram ki tchilas brias hagufu ke'en chutin, that when the human body is first formed in the womb, it looks like strings. Kemo sh'amru zichron l'racha l'perek ha'mapeles. So there's a chapter in Maseches Nida that discusses miscarriages and how fully formed a fetus has to be in order that a miscarriage would give the mother the tumah of a woman who has given birth. So the question, it discusses all different types of forms of fetuses. So it mentions there, Amar of Amram, Tana Shnei Rechosav, Kishnei Chutin Shel Zehoris, that when the fetus is first formed, the two thighs are like pure wool threads, strings.
I mean, you're not going to exactly remember these things when you look at the census. I mean, you know, whatever. It's
Now you will.
The snow before creation and
why not? I just told you. So now you remember when you look at your census.
All right. Okay.
Shnei Zerosav, same thing. The two arms are like the threads as well. And the tchilas, which is blue and looks like the firmament, reminds you that the soul comes from above. Why did God say that we're supposed to put tchelas in the tzitzit as opposed to another color? That tchelas looks like the sea, and the sea looks like the firmament, and the firmament looks like the heavenly throne. And the Vesachas Raglav Kemaseh Livnasa Sapir. It's like lapis lazuli, I think. Sapir in modern Hebrew means sapphire, but I think in the Chumash it means lapis lazuli. But however, a blue stone is God's footstool is on with lapis lazuli. Okay? It looks like it's blue. V'omer Kemare even Sapir de Muski. Say again in the first paragraph of Yechezkel, and the Merkava again talks about lapis lazuli, blue stuff. That the souls of the righteous people get to hang out underneath the heavenly throne, and it's blue. So therefore, the soul is blue. It comes from a blue source. Therefore, you have the white in the tzitzis, which reminds us of the body, and the blue in the tzitzis, which reminds us of the soul. That you wind the tcheles on the rest of the strings, which are white. That the soul is above and the body is below. So therefore, you have to subjugate the body with the soul. So therefore, that's why And exactly the way you make the tcheles, the way he's describing it here,
yeah,
is that most of the wrappings, or almost all the wrappings, maybe are with tcheles. But so even if you do, that's not the sefer chinuch shita actually of how to make the tzitzis. But whatever it is, the strings are white, and you take the tcheles string and you wrap them over the white strings. Even if you have some wrappings with the white string as well, which you do, nevertheless, it still shows the subjugation of the soul over the body. Bamru she'osin menu sheva krichos o yud gimel lerames harakiyim va'avirim shebeinehem, that you have to make seven sets of windings between seven and either seven or 13, or some say between 7 and 13, because kemosh amra ptana poches lo yivchos misheva, you shouldn't do fewer than 7, va'mosiv lo yosif al yud gimel, you shouldn't make more than 13, lo yivchos misheva kenegi shiva rakiyim, that the seven wrappings represent the seven firmaments. The 13 wrappings would represent the seven heavens, seven firmaments, and the six in between each firmament, there's a space. So here, there's a space in between the seven firmaments. Okay. Midine ha-mitzvah, the halachos are as follows. Ma sh'amar zichron al-bracha, sh'aksus shel chamesh k'nafayim o sheish. O yoser, ein matil n'botzitzes el ha-barba k'nafayim yimenu ha-miruchakos. That if you have a more than four-corner garment, you have to place a tzitzis on the farthest corners from each other. You have to give as great as possible distance between the four tzitzis. But you don't put more than four tzitzis. You only put four tzitzis.
Wait a minute. If the thing has more than...
If there's an octagon, if you have an octagonal garment...
You still have to put tzitzis on?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Who knew?
Umasha Amru, most people don't have those garments, so it's not not a big issue. Umasha Amru, sh'arba tzitzios me'akvo zo'ezo. Sh'abar arbatan mitzvachas. If you only have enough strings to make three tzitzis... No good. You have to have all four. You don't get... They're all four or one mitzvah. You don't get... Not like, well, you do as many as you can. There's a famous machlokes between Rebbe Yehuda Anasi, Rebbe, and the Chachamim, that the majority opinion in the Mishnah is that if you only have one or the other, only white strings or only tchelas strings, then you put on whatever you have and that you can fulfill the mitzvah that way. However, Rebbe holds that they're ma'akev each other. You need to have both the white and the tcheles in order to fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis at all. So that's why, famously, the Baal Hamor is the only Rishon, basically, who paskins like Rebbe. He holds that the tcheles is ma'akev es alavan. If you don't have tcheles, you don't wear tzitzis.
Even wear tzitzis, then.
So the Baal Hamor did not wear Tal's Gadol even. He was in shul. It was said that he was in shul. He was a daven without a talis. He said, there's no point. We can't fulfill the mitzvah. We had no tchelas. So they didn't in those times anyway. And we can't fulfill the mitzvah tzitzis at all. So there's no point. I'm not going to wear a talis.
If everybody followed that, the whole thing would have died out.
So that's the din. That's the din. But that's not the din. The majority opinion in the Mishnah and the vast majority opinion of the Rishonim is that the tchelas is not ma'akev es alavan, and you can wear just lavan if you don't have tchelas. The ein ha'inyan lomar shehein shtei mitzvos, that tchelas and lavan are to be counted as two different mitzvos, shakol mitzvah achasi, it's all one. El lomar shehein ma'akvin zezeh, kigon anu hayom, in the times of the Sefer Chinuch, shehein anu motzin tchelas, we don't find where tchelas is, shelo nimna b'nezeh me'atil chutin lavanim imi tchelas batalas. So we just put white strings. Unevarech aleihen, you can make the bracha even kiilu b'shleimusui matchilas, as if it were the full thing. V'chein b'zman shatchilas nimtza mishlo yilo chutin lavanim yachol atil tchilas b'sadino misatei bo unevarech aleha. You just put the tchilas, and if you happen not to have lavan, and that would work as well. V'tseva hatchilas. What is tchilas? Azesh nitzdavinu bo. Dome le'ein harakia v'taro. It looks like the sky on a clear day. So obviously this is a not a very accurate description, but some sort of blue type of color. All the indications point to the fact that the exact shade is not makev.
Well, actually, in fact, indigo chemically is identical to what we now identify in the zone, which is the Murex trunculus.
And also, there are
warning fact. There was a certain kind of tchelas which came from Ilanos, who came from trees.
It's indigo.
It's indigo.
It existed
then, and they're worried about the counterfeit tchelas, which was in fact indigo. But in fact, chemically, they're the same.
Exactly.
From a tree instead of from the fish.
Plant-based indigo is the same color as tchelas, and it's a puzzle. That's a problem. That's why, and the tchelas is much more expensive, because made from a snail, it's much more labor-intensive.
Yeah.
You only get a tiny bit per snail. And that's why there was a lot of fraud with tchelas. That's why it's one of the things, chavis, that there are certain things, it says in halacha, that when a mitzvah item or a kosher food is under non-Jewish purview, so it needs seals. It needs to be sealed. You can't just send some kosher food with a non-Jew. Let's send it to a different city and with it unsealed, because he might switch it. He could tamper with it. Who knows? So that's why there are certain things that require one seal and certain things that require two seals. So the general principle is if it's the Rabbanan, it requires one seal. If it's the Raisa, it requires two seals. So things like cheese and bread, things that are kosher sensitive, perhaps require one seal. But other things such as meat, fish if it doesn't have the skin attached, you can't tell that it's a kosher fish. Wine, that wine is a shaila because wine is only the Rabbanan. But nevertheless, because of the sensitive nature of wine and how easily it can become not kosher, then wine, we require two seals. Nowadays, some hold, by the way, that one seal is enough for wine because the non-Jews don't actually use it.
The cork counts as a seal because they get the capsule on top and then you...
I would say the cork counts as half a seal because you can take it in and out in theory without damaging the seal, but it's unlikely. And in general, a non-Jew is going to be afraid to uncork a bottle because he might not be able to put in the cork exactly in a manner that it's completely unrecognizable. Even though there are corkscrews where you can do it, but to take it in and out without it being noticeable at all would be somewhat difficult. So therefore, I would consider that the cork maybe will count as one seal, maybe. And at least the half a seal, and then the capsule counts as either one and a half or two seals.
You can put it back on fairly easily sometimes, too.
Sometimes, that's bad.
Yeah.
You should, if you find a bottle of wine like that, you should write to the Hashgacha, because they should be on top of that. Okay. So actually, it's a major problem. The wine, the capsule on a wine bottle should be tight so that it can not be removed at all without damaging it. Because, so that's considered, even the capsule alone, technically, if it's done properly, that should count in itself as two seals, because even though it's only one object, since it's so difficult, you need to go to someone to get an exact type of capsule like this, and you need to write the logo of the winery or the copy of the Hechsher, and you need to... It's so hard to forge it, even though you could. It doesn't mean it's impossible, but it'd be so hard to forge it that we don't have to be concerned for such a thing. Yeah.
So when you buy, since this, when the strands of tcheles, do they come in the sealed up package or something?
Yeah, so the tcheles is one of the things that requires two seals because there's so much incentive for a non-Jew to tamper with it that if you send a tcheles, it needs two seals, which is why, they try to have two seals. So the old tcheles things, it's just a regular plastic thing that you could just seal with, probably anyone with a sealer could make a plastic bag. And there's a sticker on the inside covering the tzitzis that attaching it to like a little cardboard thing, explaining what it is. So there's a tzitzis, there's a sticker there that you can't take off without ripping it that has the logo of Ptil Techelet on it. So that would at least count as one seal, and maybe the bag would count as another seal, because it'll be hard to forge, maybe. Mm. But now it's better because Ptil Techelet got a Hechsher. Mm-hmm. They didn't have before. It's actually Rabbi Reuben's Hechsher, which is considered one of the better ones. So he puts a hologram on the outside. So that's good. So now it has really two seals, the sticker on the inside and the hologram on the outside. You could even argue that the hologram itself is two seals because it's so hard to forge. Again, it doesn't have to be two actual objects.
But
it's
somebody just looking at the thing, how would you know if it was the real thing or forged?
We have to trust the company. You're allowed to trust the company because they're Jewish. But the question is, if you send the tcheles, if now you have a shipment of tcheles that you send from Israel to America, now it's on a boat. Mm. And that's no Jews on the boat. So the packages have to be sealed.
Then if you suppose you're say if you have tawas, tcheles on it, you have it dry clean?
Yeah, because you recognize it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh. You're not gonna you can tell, that your tawas.
And
you're going to be able to tell
if you have to mess with your dryer.
It's expensive. Tcheles is expensive. You can take
I want to swipe your...
Anyway, but that's the... It's good as a consumer to be cognizant of the requirement of seals because you could... There are problems with meat packages also. If you go into a Goyish store, like a lot of people do nowadays, they have factory packaged meats.
Yeah.
So... like a key food. So you have to make sure that all the seals are properly in place.
There's just basically two layers of a plastic wrap.
Well, the ones that are packaged at key food, the kosher meat, has a label on it.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, all right.
So that would be considered sufficient.
But tuftom or something, one of those, you just peel it off, I think.
Wait, tuftom, they don't sell meat stuff, though.
Oh yeah, I think
Tuf Tom. No, they
okay. Well, whatever. I mean the
yeah. So that could be a problem. That could.
Oh wait. Turetsvi. No.
Turetsvi.
Is that true? There's nothing and there's no indicator on the actual package.
No.
By the just so you know, since according to many shitas, so if you sent it with only one seal, b'dieved, you'd be allowed to take it. But it's still not the ideal. I mean, most packages of meat, the ones that are done well, like, for example, the prepackaged Empire chicken, so the whole wrapper is imprinted with the logo of Empire. So if you were try to damage, if you open the thing, then you'd have to go to someone with a machine that could wrap a package of chicken, and then you have to print the label, the wrapping, in exactly with all these things. So that's good. That's the way to do it. Sometimes you just have generic packaging, and then you slap a label on it. So if the label is distinctive and it cannot be removed from the package without damaging the sticker, so then that's okay. But sometimes you could peel the sticker off and put it right back on.
There's airline food that's very macher on it, which is why it's a big business trying to go ahead and get to your meal when you know. They're unwrapping it for 5 minutes.
Good. The more, the better. The more seals, the more seals, the better. Good. I mean, okay. You don't have to have more than is halakhically required, but a lot of times seals on contemporary products are indeed shvach. So just again, it's good to be cognizant of it as a consumer. Fine. So since it's so expensive, so what's going on? Behu nase. Actually, no. Okay. Good for today. We're out of time. Talk more about Tchelas next time.